fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries. Drive time.
Ladies and gentlemen, step right up. Let's go see the elephant. We're on a road.
To having another super secret email that she said she didn't have. It wasn't a lie, just a simple mistake. Even though the White House had told her not to, and to stop taking donations and speaking fees while Secretary of State, which she freely admits, continued doing so. Another mistake. Liberal talk show host Alan Combs let out the real reason the left will support Hillary no matter what. The Supreme Court. That is the left's real goal. To stack it up with the lefties, and it means nothing to them who the president is. It means something to us. The American Adversaries Drive Time on AM 660. The Answer, here to explain it all, our host, Christopher Hart.
All right. Thanks so much, Lair Adams. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us on this hot May afternoon here. Kind of like being inside an oven.
We had no spring this year.
If you are outside, you're feeling like you are inside an oven. But nonetheless, just stick with us for the next couple hours, and we'll help you get through it lickety-split. That's right. We are coming to you live on AM 660, The Answer. We're the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show. We'll be here until 7 o'clock, and we'll be coming to you once again today live. And I know where I'm at again today now, folks. Yes, I am back in the Mercury Free broadcast studios. And don't forget, for the very best in mercury-free dental care, call my dentist, Dr. James E. Hardy, at 407-678-3399. You know, for some reason yesterday, I just couldn't get it right. You know, I kept saying, we're coming to you from the mercury-free studios. Of course, we were at Fashion Square last night.
Yeah, we were several miles away.
For the BizFest.
That's why. You know, you start doing mechanically.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so that was Lair Adams. I am Christopher Hart. Lucas Paris is in the studio tonight, has us up on the Periscope. That's right. Where can people see it?
They can see it at YouTube, at our channel there. That'd be American Adversaries TV on YouTube. Type it in, you'll find us.
All right, it's just that easy.
Already 9 videos up there, so.
Excellent, excellent. So we're working to add more and more content to the waves out there, if you will. Nick LoCicero is on the bridge, so we're in good hands tonight. 407-774-8255 is the number, so just give us a call anytime you want to do so. Ken Dwyer from the Orange County Republican Executive Committee will be with us here in a little while. Tell us about some interesting going-ons up in Duval County yesterday. Duval County, that is Jacksonville, I believe, right? Yeah. And so Ken will be with us shortly to tell us about that, and we'll talk about some politics with Ken Dwyer. And then, as I said, we got 2 hours of good stuff tonight, so we got a lot to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about Hillary. We're going to talk about this issue of train safety and what these Democrats are trying to do here. And it really, once again, has nothing to do with train safety. All they're trying to do is make some political points. But also in the process, it's a guide on why not to look to the federal government for I should say why we should not, not why not, why not do it, but why we should not look to the federal government for solutions, because they're always behind the times and always putting us out on a limb and taking us for a ride, so to speak. So we'll be talking about that later on. But yeah, Hillary Clinton, the hen has clucked. She finally spoke yesterday in Cedar Falls, Iowa, after being prodded by a Fox reporter who'd finally had enough, and he just blurted out in the middle of her little concocted confab there with some Iowan sycophants, and basically blurted out a question, and she said, well, he asked her, are you going to answer any questions? And she laughed, you know, she cackled, and she said, I'll think about it. I'll make note of it. Yeah, well, somebody ought to tattoo it to her forehead that she owes the United States more respect than some sort of condescending cackle. And then she actually answered a few questions, if you want to call it that. But mainly all she wanted to do was say, I want those emails out. Yeah. Uh-huh.
She only filibustered.
Well, she wants. Well, that's what Democrats do. That's they just hog the conversation. You know, they figure as long as they're talking, the other side isn't talking. So nobody will know what the other side's really all about. Yeah, she doesn't want the emails out. She wants the emails that she wants out. And I'll have to say this. I don't think the Obama administration, who now is in charge of the State Department, you know, Hillary is no longer in charge of the State Department. Her reign there is over. It is Barack Obama's and John Kerry's State Department. And John Kerry is carrying Barack Obama's athletic supporter for him. So whatever Barack Obama wants is going to get done at the State Department. And I think that he has told the State Department, drag your feet on these emails. Let's make her, you know, simmer. Let's let Hillary Clinton simmer on the stove for a while. And then right as the campaign for presidency is really heating up in next year, then we'll release the emails and let them all have a heyday with it. Because I don't think he wants Hillary Clinton to be president of the United States. I think he's got other plans in mind, and I don't mean him staying for a third term, although it doesn't, you know, it's not hard to fathom that he would like to do that, but I don't think he will be able to do that. It would take cooperation to too many high-level people and low-level people.
Change the Constitution.
Yeah, well, no, that's not going to happen. Well, he's got somebody else in mind. I'm not quite sure who it is right now. Perhaps the mayor, old Mo Reed of Atlanta. Mohammed Reed of Atlanta. I know he is an up-and-coming star in the Democratic Party. There are others out there, too. I don't think it's Elizabeth Warren, because Elizabeth Warren would not carry his athletic supporter the way he wants somebody to do.
And he's so mad at her now for not liking his trade deal.
Yeah, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful to watch. This is why I say, folks, the adversarial form of government, in the end of the day, will win. Because everybody up there, and I'm talking about Washington, D.C., or everybody in politics, has their own self-interest at the first and the foremost in their mind. Now, they may be good, loyal soldiers for a while, but if they want to advance, they have got selfish interests at heart. And that's what the adversarial form of government recognizes and allows for. It allows for the fact that you have all these conflicting ambitions, and sort of they neutralize one another, cancel one another out, if you will. There is sort of a balancing that goes on. That certainly is sort of pendulum-like. I mean, it swings back and forth, but nonetheless, it swings back and forth. And so at the end of the day, the adversarial form of government will win out. But it's nice to see these internal feuds in a Democratic Party, because it's good news for Republicans, and gives me a little bit more comfort that even with the Republicans, who seem to always find a way to shoot themselves in the foot, well, if the other side is blowing their whole leg off, well, I guess you can get away with shooting yourself in the foot. But having said that, I think we got a cadre of some pretty good candidates going right now, and hopefully, you know, the cream will rise to the top, so to speak. But yeah, she finally, you know, says, I want these emails out. And that's about all she did say. But it was the condescending way that she, you know, she goes about it. You know, it's always laughing things off. You know, what difference does it make? Let's just laugh it off, right? What difference does it make? Which brings me to another point, and what Lair was talking about, why Democrats will still vote for Hillary Clinton. I was watching MSNBC this morning, The Morning Joke. You know, I needed a little something to get me, you know, get me fired up as I was rolling out of bed a little slow this morning. And so I watched The Morning Joke to get me fired up. And sure enough, they had a focus group of some Democrats in Iowa. And the guy conducting the focus group, he goes, okay, now, can any one of you tell me something significant, anything at all, that Hillary Clinton did as Secretary of State? That's what you heard. Nothing. It was silence in the room. And then the moderator went around and actually named a few of the people. And no, I don't really recall it. And one young girl blurts out, she goes, what about Benghazi?
did they get laughter?
No, because none of them knew what the hell she was talking about. This is how so sadly uninformed they are. Although I will have to say, I would have been left speechless too if I was to name something good, significant that she has done. In an odd sort of way, the woman was right. Yeah, Benghazi was significant, but it wasn't significantly good. Not for anybody except for the terrorists. And we now know that the Department of Defense knew that basically ahead of time. More or less, that this was going to happen. They knew immediately it was a terrorist act and that it had been planned for 10 days. Talking about Benghazi. Planned for 10 days. And they knew immediately, terrorist attack. But I'm going to tell you on the other side of the break, my theory as to why Democrats like those on the panel this morning who couldn't name one achievement of this woman were all still solidly in her corner. And there's the hint, solidly in her corner. When we come back, I'll tell you the solution to the mystery of why Democrats will still vote for Hillary Clinton and any old boob that they do put up there. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, folks. That's right. You got the American Adversaries Drive Time and now Prime Time, 2-hour Monday through Friday show. Christopher Hart here along with Lair Adams. Lucas Paris has us up on the Periscope Ustream TV. Not Ustream TV.
No, that would be YouTube.
YouTube.
American Adversaries TV.
American Adversaries TV, that's our channel on YouTube. So just go there and you can see what we do here in the studio. Nicholas Cicero, once again, is on the bridge. All right, we were talking about Hillary Clinton and the support that she has amongst core Democrats. And she... Any, this is kind of goes back to the Romney thing, you know, the 47% thing. And once again, Mitt Romney, the only reason why I believe that that whole thing stuck to him is because he didn't come out and give a good explanation of what he was talking about. And what he was talking about is this, that there's about 45 to 47% of the population who are going to vote Democrat, period.
Yes.
And so you will waste your resources if you are a Republican candidate trying to woo those people. Because they'll sit there and look at you. They may look like they're listening to you. But I guarantee you all the time that you're talking to them, they're thinking something else. They're thinking about, wow, what is he saying? I can't understand a word of what this man is saying. And so then they go back to where they're comfortable. The reason that people like these people in this focus group in Iowa who couldn't name one thing that Hillary Clinton has done other than that she's been in public life for about 25 or 30 years now, the reason they're going to vote for her, this is why we say politics is like professional wrestling or choose your sport. Whatever your team is, you're behind them. And it doesn't matter if they're winning or losing on the field, if they have good players or bad players, you might get a little upset, but if they're your team, they're your team. And in this case, it's much like professional wrestling because you don't care what your champion does. And this point was actually brought out on MSNBC this morning. Now, they didn't liken it to professional wrestling like I do, but they did say, you know, when it gets right down to it, one of the guys said after they showed the focus group, one of the talking heads said, and it wasn't the Morning Joke himself or Micah, it was one of the other ones, this is good news for Hillary because it just goes to show that no matter what they do, what the Clintons do, they're still going to vote for her. It doesn't matter. That's why we say politics is like professional wrestling. You don't care if your guy goes in there and gouges the other guy's eyes out, kicks him in the groin, does everything against the rule books, as long as he wins.
When you're over, you're over. Heel or face, you're over.
And
the
this
crowd.
Is where politics becomes a religion.
Well, it's sort of. Sort of, if you will.
Because your guy is untouchable. Your guy cannot be, no matter how much they prove against your guy.
And make no mistake that word champion that Hillary Clinton keeps throwing around, that's purposeful. They understand. They may not verbalize it the way I'm saying it, but they understand exactly what I'm saying.
There are no accidents in politics.
No. All she has to do is create this image that she is the champion of the downtrodden and the weak and the helpless. That's all she has to do. She doesn't have to present the first proposal that makes any doggone sense at all. She'll just go, I'll put it on the list of things to do. Because at the end of the day, I'm the champion of the downtrodden. And as long as she creates that image, it will be enough to get her 45% to 47% of the vote.
Already trying to establish, it's even if she took that money illegally for her foundation, look at all the good the foundation did.
It goes further than that. And this point, once again, was brought out by the team on MSNBC. And I have to sort of tip my hat to that they let this out. They actually said this. And that is that it's okay because that's what you have to do to beat the real bad guys, don't you see? You see, the Republicans, in their mind, if Hillary, poor Hillary, is having to do these illegal things, it's only because the Republicans are such a terrible and evil party. So, of course she has to do all of these things because she's our champion, and it's the only way that the champion can beat that real evil monster Republican Party.
All those good intentions.
But this is all the charade and the drama that you find on Monday Night Raw and Thursday Night SmackDown, and now on their next brand, NXT.
It's an ends that justifies the means mentality nowadays,
yeah, but
I swear.
But it's more than that. In politics, it is this psychological manipulation of people that you don't even really have to provide them with anything of substance as long as you provide them with the fluff. You follow what I'm saying?
The flash.
Here? Exactly. So here she is championing herself as the champion. And it's very purposeful because they understand if she can sell herself as a champion to the Democrats and enough of the middle class, anything else she does doesn't matter. It's beautiful when you think about it, if you can get away with it. $2 billion in a foundation, and they're going to, you know, they're skating. And there's an article in the Wall Street Journal today. Let me see if I can pull it up here. I'll get to you in a second here, Al. Hang in there. This is on page A3 of today's Wall Street Journal, the title of the article, Charities Called $187 Million Sham. See if this doesn't sound really familiar. A group of family members whose charities claim to be raising money for, in this case, cancer victims, but just plug in, you know, world victims or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, cancer victims built donors to the tune of $187 million over 5 years, spending some of those funds on fancy cars and trips for themselves and their friends, according to a civil suit. The alleged fraud, which would be one of the largest ever involving a charity, was detailed in a complaint filed by the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, all 50 states, and the District of Columbia. It describes four connected groups, all with cancer in their name, as sham charities operating instead as personal fiefdoms characterized by rampant nepotism, flagrant conflicts of interest, and excessive insider compensation. That describes to a T the Clinton
Foundation,
Global Initiative.
Yeah.
It is. And this was a paltry $187 million sham. The Clintons got a $2 billion one going, and when it comes to politics, they know it doesn't matter a bit. Especially if the people on the other side are going to let you get away with it. All right, before we go to the break, let me go to Al so he doesn't have to stay through the long break. Al, thank you for calling.
Yes, sir. What I find funny is that none of your candidates have any accomplishments either. So name one. Ted Cruz, go.
He was a solicitor. He was a successful. Hold on a minute. You said name one, and I'll tell you. We'll go down the list, but I'm going to go down the list one at a time. Ted Cruz was a very successful solicitor general for the state of Texas, argued and won cases, won in the United States Supreme Court. Okay? Now, when it comes to Rand Paul, he doesn't, and I'm not going to vote for Rand Paul. You see, this is the difference between Democrats and Republicans. Republicans will not support an unqualified candidate. Democrats will. So you're kind of making my point for me here, Al.
Marco Rubio.
Marco Rubio was a legislator in the state house. He's a senator. Be honest with you, that's where I think he's weak, too. And I'm not afraid to say it.
But a much more active senator than Barack Obama.
Yeah,
ever was.
he's actually made votes. He actually proposed and supported legislation in the state here, and he actually was around for votes in the Senate. I mean, he's done a whole lot more than Barack Obama. And the point with Hillary Clinton is, it's not so much that she hasn't done anything; it's that what she has done has been miserable failures. Miserable failures. Al, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. All right, when we come back, we're going to have Ken Dwyer, and we'll find out what happened in Duval County and see if that can give us any encouragement for next year. So please don't go away. And away we go.
Again, Ken was right in there. That's good.
Yeah, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right. You got the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show on AM 660, The Answer. If you'd like to be a part of the show, if you want to try to catch me somehow, like Al, give us a call at 407-774-8255. Okay. I just wanted, before we get back to the show, remind you folks that this portion of our show is being sponsored by Firm Foundation Home Inspections. Our man Aubrey Kahn, who showed up last night at the BizFest. We had a nice little visit with Aubrey once again.
Aubrey, always good to see Aubrey.
That's right. And, of course, he had just come from inspecting a home. And if you are, you know, buying a home is probably one of, if not the biggest, at least one of the biggest purchases you'll make in your life.
I can't think of much bigger unless you start your own business or buy a giant business.
Well, I was going to say, it depends on who you marry, but...
or how fancy a car you get.
Yeah, you might have to spend a lot on diamonds, but anyway, you know, it's an important decision, and you need somebody there to make sure that you're not going to get burned. And it doesn't matter if it's a house that you're going to live in and make your home, or if it's a rental property, it's something you plan to rent out as an investment, or if you're buying a commercial property, you know, is it for a business? Firm Foundation Home Inspections will make sure you're not going to get burned. Like I said, Aubrey Kahn's great. He's thorough. You'll find him at OrlandosHomeInspector.com, OrlandosHomeInspector.com. Or, of course, you can give him a call at 321-624-0254. That's Aubrey Kahn, 321-624-0254.
And in that business, Chris, reputation is everything, and Aubrey has probably the best in the business.
And he guarantees his work, so give him a try. Okay, all right, we got a tough guy in the studio with us right now. As a matter of fact, he looks like he's a Yul Brynner look-alike. So I'd like to welcome back to our show Ken Dwyer from the Orange County Republican Executive Committee. Thanks for being with us once again, Ken.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate it. It's been a while since we had you on the show. And you come in here today bearing good news. Something happened in Jacksonville. There was an election yesterday for a mayor and evidently a sheriff. And Jacksonville pretty much is Duval County, right?
That's correct. The whole county is the city.
Is the city. So tell us what happened.
Oh, very simple. The interesting thing is that the outsiders who've been looking at this race have seen this as the possible national requirements. So therefore, we're seeing something that could happen nationally. Republicans and Democrats went in there, each supporting their side. Now, the important thing is that this is, I think, the second time in history that a sitting mayor has been ousted in Jacksonville.
And the mayor that was ousted, Democrat Alvin Brown, lost to Republican challenger Lenny Curry. Lenny Curry is a really familiar-sounding name. Didn't the Clintons have an advisor named Lenny Curry or something like that?
I don't know about that, but he was a Republican Party chair for Florida.
Okay, maybe that's why the name is familiar.
I believe it was under Jeb Bush, or it might have been in that dark time. When
Lawton Giles was the governor?
No, in the dark time when Charlie Crist.
Yeah, I'm talking about dark days.
Because they kept switching chairs, and I couldn't even keep track of those chairs.
All right, well, he won. He's the new mayor of Jacksonville. And the sheriff lost as well, I believe, didn't he, the sitting sheriff?
Correct. Ken Jefferson lost to Mike Williams. And the important thing is that what we're talking about is fiscal responsibility and the controlling violence. That was the team effort that they put in.
So these two men kind of ran on the same themes.
Correct.
And the fiscal responsibility, in other words, budgetary issues.
Yep.
And violent crime.
Correct.
And that was the winning combination.
Yes. It's a classic way we talk about bringing government back to its basics, which was what the Republican Party should have been talking about a long time ago.
And what you're saying is that both national parties were very interested in this race.
Exactly.
Because, one, it was in Florida, Jacksonville, and, two, because it's sort of a forerunner of next year.
Well, the Democratic Party was trying to protect its base.
What were the issues that they were running on?
Well, the Democratic Party was trying to talk about the good things that has happened. They brought jobs into Jacksonville.
Okay. So it would be sort of similar, if you will, to President Obama going around saying he's created, you know, all these millions of jobs.
You've got it.
So if the national parties are right, this is a very significant victory for the Republicans.
Yes. The interesting thing is that you didn't see very much of it in the Orlando Sentinel.
No, didn't see a thing.
Oh, it was there. That's how I was able to look up the information, because at state committee meetings I heard, well, this is happening in Jacksonville, and then the small little 2-inch line that there was a new mayor in Jacksonville was all that I got in the Sentinel.
I see.
Oh, they're figuring it wasn't local enough.
Well,
just Jacksonville. It's not local enough.
Yeah, but you can bet your bottom dollar if the Democrat had won, they'd have given him more space. I guarantee you that.
I'll bet. But
this is significant for two reasons. Not just that it shows that Republicans can win in normally Democratic-controlled areas, but it also shows sort of the path to victory, too, doesn't it, Ken?
Well, I think so. I also think that it got the entire Republican Florida Party involved, which is nice to see happen.
And this is beyond mayoral politics, isn't it? I mean, this is looking forward to 2016, obviously.
Well, the interesting thing about Jacksonville-Duval County is that geographically it's one of the largest cities in the United States.
Wow. And you got a pretty diverse population up there, too, nowadays.
Exactly.
So, once again, it showed sort of a recipe for victory that if you get down to the basics, which is what it sounds like these two candidates did, they basically went back to the basics.
Exactly.
And with that, they won.
Well, the point is that the Republican candidate went to the basics.
Right,
therefore, yeah. He was not overridden by the Democratic candidate.
Right. And do you think that the national candidates will heed this good news, if you will?
Well, one of the problems that we have to face is the quantity of candidates. So therefore, can one candidate develop that message and take it to the people and get the party to rally around it?
Well, you know, you've mentioned that, and we it's a stark contrast that we have as these two campaigns for president are starting to shape up, because in the Democratic Party, it's really all about one person. And in the Republican Party, we're going to end up with probably at least a dozen officially declared candidates. Do you think that that weakens the Republican position?
It's going to make it more challenging for the Republican candidate to get their message out. Remember, we got Romney because of a lack of message, and we got McCain because of an even lesser message. So therefore, McCain would not attack Obama. And we only ended up with the vice presidential candidate attacking Obama.
You know, one thing I'm encouraged about this GOP field is that a number of the candidates seem to me like they have the spunk in the spine, if you will, to carry out a campaign where they get back to the basics.
Exactly.
And they make that argument, and they make that argument over and over again. There's a few in there that I'm not so sure about that, but if the cream can rise to the top, you know, running as a true conservative, I think, is really a winning ticket pretty much every time. Now, you've been around politics for a long time.
Yes.
Am I wrong?
No, you're right. Now, the fascinating thing is I've had one comment among us in the Republican Party about talking about Marco Rubio.
Right.
And I remember when I was in the second grade, turning on the TV and hearing this person come on who was going to challenge Henry Cabot Lodge. And that was John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And you get that same feeling when you hear Rubio.
What would you have said to Al on the phone a little while ago? I know you're sitting in the other studio there with Nick. What would you have said to Al a little while ago when he called up and said, what has Marco Rubio accomplished?
Well, I think, first of all, he has been active in the Senate. And, more importantly, he has taken on the foreign policy issues. So you know he has a record there. He's spoken out strongly.
And he's got a compelling life story. And, you know, the more people see of Marco Rubio, it seems to me the more they like him.
Exactly.
Now, by the way, Carl Jackson was at an event last night put on by the Florida Family Policy
Council. Which, by the way, I heard he did extremely well. I talked to some people today that were there and said he was great.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised. The man is brilliant. There's no question about it.
Yep.
I knew that within 5 minutes of talking to him. That's why I invited him on the show. But Carl said that the results last night of the straw poll after the panel discussion, Marco Rubio won. It was a slim victory. It was 30.7% to Ted Cruz's 30.3%. But in another bit of a surprise, Rick Santorum, who's not even officially committed yet, but it appears as though he will, bested Rand Paul. But Marco Rubio, came out at, and Jeb Bush was nowhere near the top, evidently.
Well, I think that Jeb Bush has a problem. We know him in his heart that he's a conservative. Now, if we could get him to talk like a conservative, we'd be in better shape.
Well, and there's a lot of people who have some real hard feelings because of the Common Core issue and because of some of the things that he has said on immigration. And he doesn't seem to want to back down from those things. Do you think that would be a problem for him as well?
Well, the flub that he made on the Iraq invasion.
The last week, yeah.
Yep. I think that's part of the problem. He's either out of practice or he hasn't thought things through thoroughly.
Well, and he also pulls it onto himself just because of his situation. He's got to have some comparisons with his brother all the way through the election process. This isn't just going to be a one-time thing. Everybody's going to constantly compare him with his brother, which is a lead weight on him right now.
Well, if he allows it to be a lead weight, this is something that I thought was a huge mistake. And tell me if I'm wrong, Ken. When John McCain was running against Barack Obama the first time, basically he ran away as far as he could get from George W. Bush. Now, obviously, things weren't great at the time because of the economy and everything. But when you run away from the sitting president and he's in your party, it in my opinion, it gives the advantage to the other guy. What you're saying is not only did this president fail, but his policies failed. And if his policies failed, there are Republican policies. So why should I then go and vote for another Republican? I think it would be smarter for Jeb Bush, in particular with that answer last week. Now, I know he kind of flubbed it, but he still should have turned it into a defense of, I believe, what his brother did.
Mm-hmm.
And he missed that opportunity, I think.
Well,
I think he was trying to do it, but I think he kind of messed it up.
Well, the interesting thing is that Rand Paul, who I happen to like,
yeah,
I'm a Rubio person, but being an American firster, which he really should use that term, doesn't mean that you're not going to fight the Japanese and you're not going to fight Hitler.
Right.
It simply means you're not going to spend millions on the League of Nations, and you're not going to spend billions on the United Nations. We are overextended. That's where he's right. The trouble is overextended does not mean timidity.
No, it doesn't. But we're coming up on a break. We'll take the break. We'll come back. We'll have more of the conversation with Ken Dwyer. He's with the Orange County Republican Executive Committee. By the way, when's your next meeting, and can people come?
The next meeting, I believe, is the next week on Thursday. I think it's the 28th, if I got the date right.
That's the 28th.
All right. It's at 6:45, and it will be over at 8 o'clock.
Where?
It's going to be at the Mark Street Center.
Anybody
on Mark Street.
Anybody welcome?
It's an open meeting, meaning that anyone can come.
Okay. All right, we'll be right back. Don't go away, please. All right, we're back. We're bad to the bone. We're the American Adversaries. It is Drive Time, prime time on AM 660, The Answer. 407-774-8255 is the number. We're talking with Ken Dwyer of the Orange County Republican Executive Committee. If you'd like to attend one of their meetings, find out what they're all about, perhaps join. You can go to the Mark Street Center next Thursday, week from tomorrow, at 6:25, you said? 6:45, and the meeting wrap up around 8 o'clock, and just come on out there and see what it's all about. Ken, you mentioned Marco Rubio. I think you said he's your man. Is there a general consensus or enthusiasm brewing for any one candidate in the executive committee?
No. You're going to see a variety of people coming from different directions. The governor of Ohio has a strong constituency.
John Kasich. Why do you think that is?
Well, John is a basic working guy, and you love him.
But he doesn't. He's great on Fox News.
But yep. I was going to say, but he doesn't. He's kind of an unknown, if you will. Not many people know much about him. And that'll be a problem for him, I think.
Well, the answer is he also is not into a box that you can put him, because he's not classical conservative, not classical liberal, not classical moderate. He solves problems as they come up.
But at the end of the day, is that going to be distinctive enough to establish him as a true conservative in the eyes of the Republican base?
Well, the first thing he has to do is make a decision whether he wants to run. He's putting his toe in the water, and that's basically what he's doing.
Right.
Number two, he's an excellent candidate if one wants to consider who's going to be vice president. So therefore, you talk about winning Ohio.
I see. And, of course, Ohio is like Florida. Those are two of the, if not the two key states, at least two of the most key states. Because many of the other states are kind of, you can already kind of say they're going to be either left or right, can't you?
Exactly. Now, Florida and Ohio are important to Republicans, just as I would say Michigan being important to Democrats.
Democrats, right. And I think Kasich goes around saying, and he's right, a Republican can't win the White House without Ohio. It's very rarely, if ever, been done. And so he's correct about that. I just wonder if he has the charisma, if you will. You know what I mean?
Well, the point is, when he ran the first time, if he had the charisma, he'd been elected. So therefore, he's got enough charisma to be governor of Ohio, has a record-proven ability to win Ohio, and he won with the greatest margin in Ohio.
And he did.
Re-election.
Yeah, exactly. Is he still real popular in the state?
Yes.
He is. And so he's getting some interest down here.
Oh, yeah. It's sort of like Scott Walker has that proven battle record.
Right.
Now the question is, can we add charisma to Scott Walker?
Okay. You know David Levitt, right? Refresh Computers, Seminole County Libertarian Chair. He's now running for a state office. And he told us that the Libertarian Party is looking more towards local elections to get their, get their candidates elected. Are Republicans focusing enough on local elections? I'm talking about school board. I'm talking about the county and the city commissions. Do we spend enough time getting good quality candidates elected to those offices?
Well, I know in Orange County we do. Now, we also have not been as successful as we like. My friend, Vicki Bell, who won the school board and then lost to an independent.
Right.
And its point is that getting the base put together for a Republican candidate. And school board's difficult. School board is one of those things where it's more advantageous to be female than male, one of those rare races. Usually in a state reps race or that, usually a man has an advantage over a woman in the general primary, putting everything together.
And by the way, Ken is not making a
sexist statement.
Yeah, exactly. What he's simply talking the realities of voting demographics, and that a male candidate in many races, just because we look to males to be more the role model of the leader, I take it. Is that kind of what's
playing
out?
No, it's also the business resources.
I see.
Basically, in chambers of commerce and that, all right, and this is a good example. The person who defeated Vicki Bell was the former chair of the West Orange Chamber. So therefore, getting women into the position of being part of business.
Okay, so the business community does have a big role in this, in the sense that you're meeting people and networking and meeting the people that get you to the next level.
That's exactly it. I think that women can become great candidates, but they have to play in the men's league. And that has to be it. Business is the way of doing it.
Do you think that that's perhaps one of the appeals that Hillary Clinton has to a lot of Democrats, is that they view her as a woman who can play in a man's league?
Well, to some extent, yes, but she's coming from the national organization of women's side,
right?
Not coming from the pro-business side.
Right.
She hasn't started a business. She hasn't run a business.
Well, you heard what I was saying earlier about politics and professional wrestling. Do you think that Republicans understand as well as Democrats do that, shall we say, the power of the emotional argument?
I don't think so. Part of it is it goes back to, I was brought up a Democrat. I remember handing out all these cards for all my relatives.
Yeah.
That's the second part. The Republican Party is still the party that owned the factory.
Right.
So therefore, it's got to get the factory owners and the factory workers together. Then we can win.
Okay. We have Eva on the line. Eva, thank you for your call. We appreciate you being out there. You wanted to say something about men and women candidates.
Yes. I'm a Republican, and these guys will say I'm very avid. I feel like I started the Republican Party, but I will not vote for a woman. I will, because God... And that's where I'm coming from, and that's why I'm telling it on the radio. The Democrats are following the devil. Everything they stand for is against God.
Well, I know you're right about that, but I know you will not vote for a candidate who is a woman. But, you know, Ken, a lot of people are going to vote for Hillary Clinton just because she is a woman.
Exactly.
Yes, but these are low-information voters. A real, true voter that knows what's going on is not going to vote for Hillary Clinton.
Well, they will, too, because like Alan Combs said yesterday, they'll vote for her just to get the Supreme Court switched over more into a liberal. That's what they're looking into.
Women, unless you're a highly educated woman. You have Sunny on Sunday night, and she said she's a Hillary supporter,
yep.
and she is highly educated, supposedly.
Well,
I don't know about that.
I think, you just said it, though. But let me get Ken's opinion on this.
Well,
Ken.
Let's remember Hillary's corporate connections. Remember, she can make $100,000 out of a $1,000 investment. She's got the connections in business because she knows how to sell government.
And what you just said was that the connections with business can get you a long way in politics.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, I tend to agree with you on most things, though, Eva, but I can't go as far as to say that I wouldn't vote for a woman for president if it was the right woman. And I don't think Hillary Clinton
is. I agree there, but yeah. If I had a choice, if the woman was the lesser to vote for Democrat, I'd vote for her. But unless that's my choice and I have to do it, I will not vote for a woman.
Okay. Thanks, Eva. Got to go to the break. Appreciate your call. Hope you'll choose to listen to us again on the other side. Okay. So when we come back, we got more of the American Adversaries Drive Time Primetime Show.
That's right. Another hour, actually, if you're getting this on your computer or listening device. And for another half hour over the airwaves. But do not go away.
America fell into darkness. A call rang out across the land. Blair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Blair Adams and Christopher Hart, the American Adversaries. Drive Time.
Ladies and gentlemen, sit it right up. Let's go see the elephant. We're on the road.
That's right. Rock and roll and politics always goes together. The American Adversaries. We show you how it's done. Larry Adams here with our host, Christopher Hart. We have an amazing man, Ken Dwyer, right here in our studio right now, who's setting us straight on politics and actually all over Florida.
Ken's got rhythm now. He was rocking to the beat there.
he plays a mean belt buckle.
I don't know. Are you a musician, Ken?
No, no talent whatsoever.
You must be a good dancer, though.
So.
Oh, because you were right on the beat, man. All right, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, you got the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show.
I'd like to see him dance.
That was Larry Adams. I am Christopher Hart. Go ahead, try. Let him lead, Larry. Larry Adams, Christopher Hart here, along with Ken Dwyer of the Orange County Republican Executive Committee, known as OREC. Lucas Paris has us up on the Paris Scope. So just go to YouTube and dial in the American Adversaries TV channel, and there will be Nick Lassisser Rose on the Bridge. 407-774-8255 is the number if you would like to be on the show with us today. Ken has come bearing good news. If you missed it in the last hour of the show, there was an election in Jacksonville yesterday, and the Republican candidate ousted the Democrat for the mayor. Lenny Curry beat Alvin Brown and has become the new, now Republican mayor of Jacksonville. And a fellow by the name of Williams,
Mike Williams.
Mike Williams is now the new sheriff of Jacksonville, Duval County, I should say. It's one and the same. And that's two big victories for Republicans. I just want to read a little bit of an article that was from the Times Union. I guess that's the Jacksonville Times Union. It says, with all 199 precincts reporting, Curry had 51% or 103,000 votes to Brown's 48%. Just soak it in with me, Curry told raucous supporters at his election night party at the downtown Hyatt. The work starts now. Outsiders will suggest the race, the most expensive in city history, largely run by outside operatives, that's the key phrase there, has shades of the 2016 presidential election because both candidates have ties to national political figures. But at home, the stakes were clear. Jacksonville is a cash-strapped city with a $1.62 billion debt to the police and fire pension fund. Violent crime dominates the headlines. Long persistent divides of wealth, race, and schooling define the differences amongst the sea of neighborhoods in the largest city by area in the continental United States. Kind of sounds like an assessment, though, a microcosm of the nation as a whole.
You've got it. Remember, this is the home of Corrine Brown.
It is.
And where they have all these problems and these needs, and they put a swimming pool on top of their stadium.
Well, that's probably done.
I understand that, yeah, but still, this is, it kind of goes to that same, waste your money on something that really won't help anything.
Well, what's
sure didn't help their team.
What's encouraging here is, like we were saying earlier, is that Curry and Williams both went back to the basics. You know, we're going to budgetary issues, crime issues, those are the things that people, you know, they're worried about the pocketbook issues and security issues, basically what it boils down to.
That's it. What you discuss at the kitchen table.
Exactly. And so that's the winning formula here. And what's encouraging is that Jacksonville is much like these northern cities like Baltimore and Detroit, where Democrats have ruled the roost for a long time. And go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. And one of the things is you come down to Florida, and it takes you still some time to accommodate and think about why you left the North in the first place. Because people come down here and they register Democrat.
They bring their liberalism with them. But what's encouraging is that a Democrat city run, Democratic-run city for a long time, without the benefit, if you want to call it that, of riots, has turned away from the liberal solution and now is going to at least give the conservative solution a chance.
Well, think of it as, can we still deliver all those services and collect all those taxes? If we don't start prioritizing the services that we're going to deliver, we'll never get anything done.
And by the way, Lenny Curry does have an accountant background, so he knows how to crunch numbers. He knows, the bottom line. Mm-hmm. And as an accountant, he knows the principle that you never get ahead by spending more than you bring in.
Exactly. And that's the whole thing is that I think that Romney could do the part of talking about the money, but he never followed up by saying is, okay, now that we've got the money, why do we doing it? We're doing this to help people. A government can't help people if it doesn't have the money, and it can't help people unless it makes a choice on focusing on services that it's going to deliver and can deliver versus the pool on top of the stadium. Or maybe a soccer field.
Yeah, exactly, like downtown Orlando here. You want to talk about a boondoggle. It's that the priorities are just totally all screwed up.
Exactly. A private business should be able to build its own soccer field.
You would think so, and you would think that they would actually want to. It's beyond me why private entities, it's obvious. They want the millions, but strings always come attached. It's never really, at the end of the day, the best relationship.
But we got a corporate welfare concept going in the nation.
Right.
All right. So therefore, one of the things corporate leaders are now doing is trying to get on the same gravy boat with everyone else.
Well, in a way, you kind of can't blame them. If there's gravy out there to be gotten, why not go for some of it? But the solution does start back, in Washington or in, at the government offices to finally say, look, welfare is not good no matter who you're giving it to. Whether you're giving it to a corporation or you're giving it to an individual, what you are ultimately doing is weakening them in the process because they become a slave to that welfare. And I think that's where our corporations are right now.
Well, exactly. Now, let's reverse it. In California, you have Silicon Valley.
Right.
They're getting money. And what's happening? They're still supporting the same liberal causes.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So the state never progresses.
Right. And people end up leaving. They end up leaving the state and, unfortunately, taking their liberal politics with them, many of them. But what's encouraging about Jacksonville is that it appears to me that people are ready. There's a new poll out yesterday. It's now 3/4 of the population thinks the nation is going in the wrong direction.
Exactly.
And so it's a prime moment. It's a great opportune moment, if you will, for conservatives to step up and say, look, we don't have a problem with Barack Obama, but we got a problem with liberalism. And here's why. We don't have a problem with Hillary Clinton, but we got a problem with liberalism, and here's why. And make the case for conservative solutions, and make the case that if we continue to go down this path, it's not going to get better just throwing more money at it.
Well, a stronger, focused government, all right,
yeah,
is going to be a smaller government. It's not a smaller government that we're trying to get. It's a stronger, focused government that can do things.
And in that, there's a great deal of wisdom, because the more a government tries to do, the least effective it's going to be in whatever it's doing, because its resources become spread too thin. One hand of the government doesn't know what the other hand of the government is doing. And so we end up spinning our wheels, wasting our money, and not really getting anywhere in the process.
Exactly. And that, I can tell you, was probably the story of why, right, Lenny really won, is that the people saw the system breaking down. And then Lenny said, I have a solution. Not, I don't like the governor. Not that I don't like the mayor. Not that I don't like this. I have a solution. If we Republicans do not offer solutions, the people will not vote for us because we do not deserve to be elected.
And that's one thing that Ronald Reagan was really good at, providing solutions. And the people, gave him a shot. And his solutions worked. So they gave him another shot. And then they gave George H.W. Bush a shot, basically because of Ronald Reagan's policies and the economic boom that they brought. Go ahead.
The last 2 years of W, unfortunately, was corporate greed gone wild.
It was, yeah. Indeed it was. And for whatever reason, he was in too weak of a position politically. Well, we know the reasons. Iraq was dogging him. Katrina was dogging him, and then you had the financial crisis. So he basically was, for the last 2 years, politically bankrupt. And what do I mean by that? I mean politically in the sense of his political capital, as he called it.
Yeah. He made his management mistakes, and it all came back at one shot.
It did indeed. And now we were talking during the break, you know, after Eva's call in the last hour, Carly Fiorina, what are your thoughts about her? Is there excitement in Orange County for her?
Well, I like her. All right. The reason that she wouldn't be the most exciting thing is she does not have as solid a track record. Now, she has been able, I think, ably to defend her leadership of Hewlett-Packard.
Right.
All right. And I think her explanations have made her a stronger candidate. I just wish she was a governor of a state.
Yeah.
And then I'd say she'd prove. I wish she would look at the open Senate race and think about that.
Well, of course, she did run for Senate in California and lost to Dianne Feinstein. But, yeah, Barbara Boxer is retiring, so it would be an opportune moment for her. Perhaps we shall see if that can work out. But at the end of the day, the Republicans do have a good, solid field. Hopefully, as I say, the cream will rise to the top.
Well, let's ask the general public this. If you had a choice between McCain and Fiorina, who would you vote for? I'd vote for Fiorina.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I told you during the break, I'd probably vote for her over Romney, too. Just because, you know, she's got a toughness to her. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? There is a toughness to that woman.
Well, when she was the corporate leader, she was not afraid to make the cuts. All right? Now, that cost her down the road, but in the end, it was the right cuts.
And it probably saved Hewlett-Packard from becoming, taken over by another corporation.
Exactly.
Well, guys, one thing we have, too, here, with so many people running on the Republican side, is you've got a whole bunch of people out there to go out there and tear Hillary up all over the base. Hillary only has her. She doesn't have a bunch of people going out describing how bad each one of these Republicans are. But Fiorina especially, if she's not going to be the nominee, she can go out there and do a wonderful job of taking out Hillary and doing as much damage as she can.
Real quick, it's Fiorina.
Yeah.
Carly Fiorina. But I think that Republicans need to be careful. I think that the recipe for victory is in Jacksonville. You present solutions, and that will carry the day. Let the other candidate sort of, you know, do whatever they're going to do. Focus on the solutions, and you will get more people in your corner.
Exactly, because we need solutions.
Absolutely. Ken, thanks. We need guys like you working hard out there like you're doing. We so appreciate it. Thanks for coming in and being with us today.
Thank you.
That's Ken Dwyer, Orange County Republican Executive Committee. Their meeting is next week, their monthly meeting next week, Thursday, at the Senior Center, which is on Marks, right downtown there, Orlando. 6:45 is when it starts, and they just love you to come on out and be a part of the Republican Party. We'll be right back.
Good. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show, folks. That's right. If you feel like you're on the crazy train, wait till you hear this next story. You are listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show. Christopher Hart, Lair Adams with you. Ken has left the studio, but you can be a part of the show at 407-774-8255. You know, after this train derailment up in Philadelphia last week, you know, the Democrats were, the wheels on the train hadn't finished spinning before the Democrats were out there saying, oh, this is all the fault of the Republicans because they didn't spend enough money on Amtrak. And that's been their mantra ever since. And, it's absolutely absurd. All of the equipment that they're talking about that these trains need has been funded long ago. As a matter of fact, the original mandate goes back to 2008. But Amtrak hasn't gotten it done yet. And even then, it is questionable whether the technology that the Democrats are talking about would actually do any good. And beyond that, there are other technologies that probably are going to be better. Here's part of the problem. Here's part of the problem when we allow government to be the solution for us. There's an article in today's Wall Street, once again, today's Wall Street Journal by Holman Jenkins. And he's one of their editorialists, How Congress Railroaded the Railroads. Let me just read a little bit of this for you. Is there a more absurd technology than positive train control, which Congress imposed as an unfunded mandate on railroads in 2008, and which supposedly would have prevented last week's Philly Amtrak crash? Except it didn't, since its implementation has dragged on, and the design so clearly inferior to cheaper, faster, more up-to-date solutions. In other words, technology has advanced since this 2008 mandate, but Congress, because they made the mandate, why, they don't have to mess with it anymore, right? The train companies, all the trains are supposed to take care of it. And money was provided with later funding with Amtrak to update it. Now, what this positive train control amounts to is it kind of takes us back to the 19th century, because what they would have to do is install basically radar towers, radio antennas all along the track.
Yeah.
Okay, so that the radio antennas could monitor the train. And if the train's doing something it's not supposed to do, the radio antennas would send a signal to a remote location, which would then supposedly go back to the train and slow the train down or do whatever, you know, to correct the train's.
They basically just did. The trains are up and running now, and they already put the device in that slows the train down automatically, whether the engineer does or not.
Well, that's because this device was invented after this 2008 mandate. And when the mandate was passed, the technology to do what the mandate called for didn't exist. So basically, they mandated something that didn't exist, hadn't been invented at the time. And then later on, of course, newer technology made it outmoded, outdated. I mean, just cell phones. Your regular cell phone can provide better information than to have radio antennas all along the doggone track. This is 18th century technology. This is, you know, back when Marconi, I mean, Tesla. I mean, this is ancient stuff. And by the way, this would cost about $13 billion or more, some of which would be, of course, fall to the railroads, but most of it would fall to the public. And the train, as Larry said, because trains run on rails, you know, they can only go basically one way. Mm-hmm. Whichever way the rails go, they got to go that way. And so it would be very easy with modern locomotives just to program into the computer on the locomotive basically the layout of the track. In other words, with this computer software...
We got cars that can drive themselves.
That's what he points out in the article. A Google car can interpret all kinds of different variables.
Don't have to worry about.
Exactly. Exactly. And basically, it's just a matter of programming computer equipment that's already in the locomotive, because these modern-day locomotives have up-to-date computer monitoring equipment.
Sure.
That they're sending, you know, signals to remote locations. So basically, you program into the computer all the layout of the track from point A to point B. Okay, it starts out in New York. For this many miles, the train can go 50 miles an hour. For the next so many miles, it can go 70 miles an hour. Then you come upon a turn, the train has to slow down. All this is already in the computer on the train. Has nothing to do with funding, has nothing to do with Republicans, but it has everything to do with safety. But that's not what Democrats are really interested in. Oh, they might tell us that they want us all to travel safely. They might tell us that they're there to make sure that we do so. But at the end of the day, in fact, people dying on the tracks in Philadelphia, the Democrats profited from it because they went out and they made their political point.
Used it.
And exactly. They used it to
use the death and
destruction.
Horror.
Then use the death and destruction to make their political hay, to make their political pay, if you will. It's blood politics, and it's politics of the worst sort. And they were
called on the carpet for it, too.
We've had some response, but I mean Republicans 201, especially the Republican candidates for president, should be out there going, this is absurd, this is disgusting, this is why people are so turned off with politics in America. All right, folks, I hope you're not turned off by us, because I hope you'll listen to us. Now, the Rays pregame show is coming on, so you'll have to listen to us on AM660TheAnswer.com. Or, of course, you can have already downloaded the free app into your smart device where you can listen to us on your iPhone or laptop or whatever. We'll be right back.
The Answer.
And we're back, and we are here in Drive Time Prime Time. It is clouded up a little bit out there. I understand there's some showers and places out there on the road. So if you're heading out, just be aware of that. And be careful if you run up against some of those wet roads, because, you know, it hasn't rained for a while. So they say after a long time.
Black ice.
Yeah, be careful. Yeah. Be slippery out there. Okay. And we got some more to talk about here. And I see Mara Lee of Vacation Travel Planners is here. So we'll bring her in the next segment. We'll talk about the latest out of Vacation Travel Planners playbook. But first, I want to go back. By the way, welcome back to the show. I'm Christopher Hart along with Lair Adams. We have Lucas Paris in here. He's got the Periscope up and running. Just go to YouTube and dial in our station, American Adversaries TV. And by the way, we're putting them up there. They don't have to watch it live, do they?
No, they don't. I'm literally putting them up as the segments finish.
All right. So they'll be
only be a couple of minutes behind us, technically.
Well, that, or you can just watch it at your convenience. If you see me dabbing my eyes today with a little paper towel here, no, I'm not crying because Ken Dwyer left the studio, although it was a sad moment.
Not that there isn't enough in media today to cry about, honestly.
No, I've been fighting off a little bit of a cold, and my eyes are watering up on me. So anyway, this is another story, though, to make you want to cry. It was in today's Orlando Sentinel that Florida is considering wind farms. We were talking just the other day about solar energy in the state of Florida. Now we're talking about wind farms in the state of Florida. And the reason we don't have many wind farms here right now is because we really don't have steady winds like you need to make these things practical. At least not at the heights where most wind farms, wind turbines are built. They're typically about 250 to 300 feet tall. They would need to be about twice as tall as that to be effective here in Florida, which they're talking about doing, and may eventually end up doing that. I mean, this does seem to want to be one of the Greens' favorite forms of alternate energy. Right now, wind turbines provide about 4% of our overall power needs, and mostly on the West Coast out there in California, Oregon, some in Texas.
Hey, we need to kill some more birds.
Well, I was just going to get to that part of the story, Lair. So thanks for leading us in that direction. Because right next to, now, it's interesting because the sort of the pro wind farm article starts on the front page of the Orlando Sentinel and then is continued on page A11. And then, though, right there next to the continuation, but on page A11, nowhere near the front page, is sort of the, if you will, sort of the counter argument. And even then, the Sentinel couldn't bring themselves to really reveal what Lara's talking about. And this secondary article is entitled, U.S. Needs Wind Turbine Rules to Save Birds, Advocates Say. Like, making rules about wind turbines is going to somehow, prevent them from chopping these birds and bats and insects, for that matter, into little pieces.
They just won't allow the birds to fly there.
We follow rules. Tell Mother Nature to follow rules.
That's
I doubt
right.
she will.
But listen to the way they word this. Federal guidelines from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service urge wind energy developers to locate turbines with special care in places such as the Thumb region of Michigan's or Lower Peninsula, or avoid them altogether to prevent fatal collisions between birds and the tower's whirring blades. Now, part of the problem with that is one of the reasons why they put the wind turbines where they put them there is because that's where, guess what?
The wind is.
The wind is, right? Now,
amazing how that, that's scientific.
Larry, your brilliance astonishes
me. Well, they ought to hire me.
It would be a whole lot better
off. I can see this coming up. Where do birds like to go?
Yeah.
Where the wind is.
Especially migratory birds, because they don't want to be flapping their wings a lot. And so they fly on the wind. I mean, this is just so...
Currents of the air, just like currents in the ocean that the fish follow.
Exactly. And when you go putting these things 300, 400, 500, 600 feet in the air, you're right up there where the migratory birds fly. I mean, this is just... And this is the green solution, right? What this does, though, is it proves that you can't dance without paying the fiddler. In other words, if we want energy, if we want to warm our homes in the winter and cool them in the summer, it's going to cost something. Either we're going to have to take oil out of the ground and burn it, coal out of the ground and burn it, natural gas out of the ground and burn it, or we're going to, you know, whack up a bunch of birds into little pieces, or we'll give up a lot of area to solar energy and not have the reliability. You know, we'll be cold when we don't want to be cold, or we'll be warm when we don't want to be warm. I mean, it's like the law. I forget which of the laws of thermodynamics it is, but, you know, there are the laws of thermodynamics. And basically, these are, if you will, rules of nature. And one of the laws of thermodynamics is that no system is totally efficient. In other words, there's always a cost. There's always a loss. There's always a waste, no matter what system you are talking about, whether that system is our planet spinning on its axis or whether that system is a motor in your car. There is still something that is taken and used and replaced in the process. And so to think that, you know, green solutions are just, you know, they're the most wonderful thing. And why can't people see how much better they are than those mean old nasty carbon, you know, sources of energy is just not realistic. It doesn't match the real world. In the real world, no system is 100% efficient. There is no perpetual motion machine.
And you're not going to get everything you want out of one thing. I mean, I see people today that drive these teeny little cars. Now, yes, you're going to save a lot of money driving that teeny little car till you get into an accident. And the guy in the bigger SUV that isn't hurt as bad, and you lose arms and legs, or your life is ruined, or you're killed. How much did you save? How much of the earth did you help?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, in their quest to save the planet, they are destroying the planet. It's because that's the way nature is. You know, even the earth is not a perpetual motion machine. It is gradually slowing its spin on its axis, gradually slowing. It's a very gradual thing, but we have to adjust our atomic clocks to compensate for it.
Got a little note here the other day. The Earth gets, 100 tons heavier every day due to falling space dust.
Well, yeah. So, you know, no system is untouched by the realities of nature. And this is what the green energy movement would have us believe that they can do. But at every turn, we find that it's fraught with danger. It's fraught with unreliability. It's fraught with nonsense, foolishness,
and a lot of it's arrogance.
It is. It is total arrogance. That would be the one word that I would describe it. Arrogance in the sense, first of all, that human beings have that much of an impact on nature to begin with. We're puny in the overall scheme of things. And then arrogance in the sense that green energy is going to be the solution to all of these environmental woes. Well, you cannot have life without pollution, if you want to call it that. The whole process of living means you will produce byproducts of life. It's just the way it is. Then you just get down. You have to really, if you're being a real person, a real thinker, you simply get down to thinking about, okay, well, if all of life has cost, so to speak, where can I most efficiently spend that? And we're not doing that now, because we're caught up on all this, green energy nonsense. And still, there are a lot of conservatives out there who think that, human beings do have an impact on the environment, and gosh, we got to do something about it. I mean, George W. Bush said that. Mitt Romney said that. If the next Republican candidate comes along saying that, we're going to have Hillary Clinton for a president. Because it's just not reality. And you're not providing the contrast from that unreal world to the real world. As long as you are willing to live in the unreal world, you Republicans, you will get burned by it. This is why it's kind of encouraging, the news that Ken brought into this election in Jacksonville. The new mayor, Lenny Curry, just got down to business. He says, look, the city's broke. You know, we got to do stuff to turn this around. We can't keep going down this same, you know, rosy-eyed, rosy, looking through the rose-colored glasses approach. We have to look at things as real as they are. And we have to deal with them with that reality and understanding that no system is 100% efficient. It just doesn't work that way. So when you put that up as your goal, you are already setting yourself up for failure. Of course, with Democrats, they don't mind failure because they got Republicans to blame it on. Just look at the train. Just look at the train. Yeah. They didn't care where the train derailed. They didn't care why it derailed. All they cared was that they could go out and make political points on it. And they did. So the Republicans should know by now what they are up against. And they should know by now that if you're going to play on the Democrats' playing field, so to speak, the Democrats are going to mop the floor with you. You have to change the playing field. You have to bring the public back to reality. And the way you do that is, for one, with facts, but also with ridicule. And by turning the argument on those who would want to put you on the spot. Once again, it's like this thing with Jeb Bush. Jeb Bush kind of had the right idea with his first answer, even though it wasn't the answer to the question that he was asked. He was on the right track, though, because what he was trying to do was defend George W.'s decision to go into Iraq in the first place. But then he got caught up and he didn't really seem to understand the question. That's not what the woman was asking. He was so set for that answer that he didn't know what to do when the question was
too pre-prepared.
Exactly. Exactly. And then after that, he just got all flustered and didn't really know what he wanted to say at the end of the day. And so finally, he ended up saying what the questioner evidently wanted to hear. And by the way, this was from Megyn Kelly. Yeah. So, you know, it wasn't as though he was up against, you know, some liberal out to get him like George Stephanopoulos. Just imagine if he had been. But it comes down to the point that he wasn't really comfortable defending conservatism and defending the role of the United States of America as being the world superpower. And if you're not comfortable doing that, the Democrats are going to eat you alive, because that's where they want you. They want you in an area of discomfort, an area where you don't feel confident, an area where they got you hanging on the line, you know, to their hypothetical questions. You got to be smarter than that. You got to turn those hypothetical questions around and show them to be absurd. And W didn't do it. And to be honest with you, I haven't heard pretty much anybody yet do it. But believe me, there are other people out there who feel like I do. I believe it was on Fox News this morning. They had a veteran on there going, hey, what about us? Now you're telling us that we went over there, all these tours of duties, yep, and all of our buddies who didn't come home.
It was a waste of time at Ramadi.
Yeah. You wouldn't do it again? I mean, come on. Okay. It looks like we're up against another break. When we come back, we're going to have Mara Lee of Vacation Travel Planners join us. So please don't go away. Don't forget, you are listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time Primetime Show.
Hey, I heard something here, something about Elian Gonzalez.
Oh, yeah, we'll talk about...
Remember him, everybody, with Bill Clinton and what was that ugly lady's name?
Oh, Jan Reno.
Jan Reno. Oh, my God. Frankenstein's let loose.
Janny, baby. You got that right.
We'll talk about it momentarily.
Yep.
Yeah, we're here to teach you some lessons too, the American Adversaries. Actually, in our second hour for this wild and wacky rainy Wednesday. And we just had someone join us right now. It is always our pleasure to have this lovely lady come in and grace our little studio here. And that would be the beautiful Mara Lee.
Hello.
Hello, Mara Lee. How are you today? I love that voice.
Thank you.
She does all her ads here, folks. Does them herself, right?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, she's got some new ones.
Everything.
Some new ones we're going to put up. Has Elian Gonzalez contacted you?
Me personally, no, he hasn't.
Because he needs a travel agent.
I know. He wants to come visit us.
He does. He wants to come back to the United States to thank the people here in the United States, evidently, for wanting to keep him here.
And there's no way while he's here he'd want to stay.
Well,
no. Actually, no, he doesn't want to.
He says that.
Yeah, actually, he's probably got it pretty good down there. The Castro regime probably took pretty good care of him down there, considering.
Yeah, he's considered like a celebrity down there.
Yeah, exactly. But he's 21 now. He was 6 years old when this happened. 15, can you believe it was 15 years ago?
No.
But it was late in the Clinton administration. I remember the morning that it happened, you know. But, yeah, Elian Gonzalez wants to come back to the United States to thank us. That would be sort of odd, wouldn't it? Especially for the Clintons.
I was going to say, is he going to come and kind of help Hillary with
Do you think he'd want to be one on the campaign with her? I don't know. Real quickly, though, vacationtravelplanners.com is where you can get a hold of Marilee, or actually call her at 321-251-4777. And what new you got cooking over there today?
Well, May is actually Military Awareness Month. So a lot of the different cruise lines, a lot of different tour companies are actually doing specials for both our active military and our veterans. So we have some of those up on the website, and you can see it right on the front page. It'll actually have which ones are, you know, having the military ones, where if you don't see it, that you can just put in for the comment, and I can tell you what's going on.
This is active military and not retired?
No, retired as well.
Okay, good. Awesome.
Of course, Monday is Labor Day. By the way, folks, we'll be taking Monday off.
Memorial Day.
Did I say Labor Day? I'm sorry. Memorial Day. Yeah, we'll be taking Memorial Day off. Now, are these cruises that they have to take in the month of May?
No, you just have to book them.
Okay. So you just have
to book these trips during the month of May, but it could be any time during the year.
Okay. You can go to vacationtravelplanners.com. What's the hottest cruise you got going right now? What's the best deal out there?
Probably Alaska, you know, because right now we just started Alaska season this month,
right.
May.
Yeah.
So people are already heading up there. But if you can swing, you know, last minute airfare and get up there, you can get up there as low as like $449 for a 7-night cruise.
$450 for a 7-night Alaska cruise?
Yes.
God, that's like a little about $65 a day for cruising.
Now, you have to fly there, right?
Right.
But for a cruise like that, that's
yeah, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Whale watching.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great stuff. And those cruises are all summer long?
Through September, the beginning of September. But, of course, you know, July and August are the peak months because that's when it's going to be the warmest.
Sure.
Yeah,
down here.
So, and of course, that's when the majority of the kids are out of school. So you'd be surprised there are a lot of families that actually do Alaska cruises during the summer.
And you can guarantee they won't sweat anywhere. Because it's still a little bit chilly there in the summer.
Well, that's true.
My mother and my brother went there.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we went up there, you basically dress in layers when you go to Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Because depending on where you are, depends on how warm it actually is.
Yeah. How about our Come Sail Away With Me cruise?
Come Sail Away With Me is so exciting. November 13th for 3 nights, right here out of our backyard in Port Canaveral on the beautiful Enchantment of the Seas.
And it's a beautiful ship. Yeah,
it is a beautiful ship.
Yeah.
The food is excellent. I've sailed on her. She's great.
And so they can book now for our Come Sail Away With Me cruise.
Yes. Deposit is $100 per person. I'll secure your cabin. Cabins start at $229 for insides, $269 for ocean views, and $499 for balcony.
Wow. So for $269, you can have an ocean view cabin for 3 nights, Caribbean cruise.
Correct.
And for what?
Per person, right?
$499, yes, per person.
For a balcony, though. I mean, that's sweet. That's sweet there. And by the way, folks, if you're a member of our American Adversaries Army or joined between now and August, you will be entered into a drawing where you may be able to go on that cruise for free. We're going to choose a person to go for free. But you have to be a member of the American Adversaries Army, right?
That is correct.
And the easy way to do that is go to AmericanAdversariesRadio.com, go to our recruiting office, and sign up to be a member of the American Adversaries Army. It only costs you $4.97 a month. And for that, you'll get a great intel brief, we call it. That's our version of a newsletter. And there'll be discounts and coupons inside. All of our sponsors are listed. And so, join the Army, get some great benefits that way, and then you'll be entered into a drawing. Maybe you can go on that cruise with us for free.
Absolutely. We'd love to have them. Everybody come on.
That's right. And it does sound like a lot of fun. The three-night cruise in November, November 13th, and sailing from Port Canaveral. So we certainly hope you folks will join us and join
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those
and
are
you're
the
back
nights.
Early enough Monday morning to where you can actually still go to work.
Ah, so that's going to be a lot of fun. And by the way, when they go to your website, can they see a diagram of the ship and where the cabins are?
I'm trying to think if that's on our website, if that's on our link, but if it's not on the link, I can definitely send it to them.
Okay. All right. So, if there's any information that you can't find on her website, you can tell Mary Lee, and mm-hmm. she will get the information for you. And by the way, she deals in all kinds of vacation travel, not just cruises, right?
That's correct. I actually have a group going to the Holy Land in January 2016.
Wow.
We're going to do a 10-day trip over.
How much does that cost, somebody wants to go?
That is $27.98, all-inclusive, with air from Newark, and the air add-on from Orlando is $2.98.
So for about $3,000
bucks, right.
You can go to the Holy Land for how long?
10 days.
Wow.
And that's your round-trip air, your transfers, hotels, meals, sightseeing.
So that gets you from Orlando to Israel and back?
Yes.
For $3,000 bucks. Wow. And 10
yes.
days.
Yes.
You can't beat that. $300 a day to go on the other side of the world and see the Holy Land is definitely worth it if you can afford it. And when is that again?
That's going to be January 18th.
January the 18th. Mm-hmm. So definitely, please, folks, sign up for that. If you're able to do that, you should take advantage of it. Once again, Mary Lee is vacationtravelplanners.com is her website, 321-251-4777. And you got specials going on all the time, don't you? I mean, new things coming and going?
All the time. We get last-minute deals. We get deals for in the future. And so we're always posting things on the website. And I send out a weekly newsletter that tells people as well.
People can go to her website, vacationtravelplanners.com, and sign up. And she'll send you that newsletter with all kinds of deals every week.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you just kind of sit back and wait for that one to come along. And, hey, that's what I've been wanting to do. Here's a price I can do it at. So vacationtravelplanners.com is the place to go, and she will get you where you want to go, right?
Right.
we're about to wrap it up for tonight. Thanks for being in with us, Mary Lee. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And we'll be doing this more and more as the summer goes along. And once again, folks, please join us for our Come Sail Away With Me cruise. And that's the way it's labeled on your website, right? Come
yes.
Sail Away With Me?
It says Come Sail Away With Me. It's up on the banner. It's also under the groups tab. So you just look for that, click on it, and the information's right there.
Reserve your cabin today. Only $100 to reserve your spot. And if you join the American Adversaries Army, you may end up going for free. And if you do, you'll get that deposit back, right?
Correct.
Okay. All right. That's going to pretty much wrap it up for tonight.
That's it for Hump Day. Well, we made it for Hump Day this week. We'll be back, of course, tomorrow night for 2 hours. Is there a game tomorrow night? Do you know?
I think there is, but we'll have Mike McBath on tomorrow night, so that'll
awesome.
Always be interesting.
All right, folks. We are the American Adversaries. Can't wait to see you tomorrow.
Night, everybody.
AM 660, The Answer, WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. A service of Salem Communications. Intelligent, conservative, AM.